who want to greet you in Jesus' name. Brother Luke's devotions made me think of an article I was reading this week about how the atheists are finally getting it together. They realized they were missing something, and that people who believe in God have. They didn't have a way to celebrate their unbelief, and they felt so lonely. So they've started establishing atheist churches where they can get together and celebrate mankind as being the answer to all of their problems and the fact that none of them believe in God, so they can do what they want to. And I thought about that psalm, you know, and all the focus here today is on God, His greatness and His works. You go out there and you see the spring day, and you go through life and you look at the puzzles of life, and everything points, all of it's pointing back to God. And if you were determined to not see God, how empty that would have you. And the last phrase there was that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of what? Now let's turn that around. The denial of God is what? The beginning of folly. Is that right? Denial of God is the beginning of folly. People are so empty. It's taken a huge circle. But you know, a lot of people finally come back and find God because of how empty it is to not know Him, how empty life is. There's just that God quest in us. We want to know Him. And it's more than just formal religion. I can understand that. You want to know, to love God with all of your heart, that personal relationship is, it's where it is. It's what it's all about. Brother Luke started out with 1 Corinthians 11, and I would like to invite you to turn there. It's what he said is true. We're preparing for a very, very serious and holy experience next Sunday. And this is a solemn work that needs to be done. And I want to show you why. In 1 Corinthians 11, I would like to read verse 27. I believe Brother Luke referred to verse 28 and 29. Wherefore, whosoever shall eat this bread and drink this cup, and the phrase that really stood out to me in meditating on that verse this morning, of the Lord. Now, up here there's a cup. Whose is this? Whose is this cup? That's the preacher's cup. Or the Sunday school teacher's cup. It's for whoever's up here and he needs it. Okay? And the rest of y'all just leave it alone. This is our cup. We need it. We'll use it. If we don't need it, we'll let it alone. But you get kind of, do you have anybody in your family that's possessive of their cup? Maybe even have their cup marked. But once they drink out of it, they don't want anybody else to touch it. And it's my cup. Cup, the bread, that's on my plate. You let it alone. It's something special. Do you know what? Just personal feelings about this cup. We're talking about drinking the Lord's cup. We're talking about eating the Lord's bread. That's holy, a holy experience. It's more than just germs. It's morals. It's spiritual condition, it's character condition, it's heart condition. And that's why he says, if you eat that bread and drink that cup unworthily, that's serious. Because God has, Jesus has his name on his cup. And he will defend his cup. He will defend his bread. And we may not see immediate results, but somewhere down the road, it will be very visible. And it's not about playing a game. This is about a relationship with God that is maintained. Because something that's very sober, and that is, we can lose our way in our walk with God. I don't know where you are this morning, and everybody needs to start in their walk with God. That in your walk with God, from one communion to another, from one time of examination to another, we can lose our way. And if we begin to stray in our very short time, we can get far from God. And it's all about where are we in our walk with God. And that's what we'd like to look at this morning. Now, a lot of times, I don't know, I suppose most of you are aware of this. Bishop goes around, he has counsel and communion a lot of places. And for a long time, I'd get a different sermon for every place. And sometimes I get the same sermon for every place where I have communion. And this year, I've been committed to a verse from Ephesians for a counsel message. I invite you to Ephesians chapter 4. And I'm going to use the same message some of you heard me preach already in your home congregation. But the verse that was laid on my heart to preach for our communion or counsel service is verse 28. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28. And as I read this verse, I was like, well, Lord, that's not a counsel message. And maybe when I get done on the way home or wherever you go and you go out these doors, you'll agree with my first thoughts and you'll say, well, Lord, that really wasn't a counsel message. Okay. And if that's your conclusion, that's okay. But I'd like you to think about this verse. Verse 28 says, let him that stole steal no more. But rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Everywhere else where I preach this message, I preach it on a Wednesday night or a Friday night or a weekday. I didn't ever preach this on a Sunday morning. On Sunday, we lay our labor aside and we don't work. So somehow to preach about working doesn't seem quite right. But we're going to do this anyway, okay? And I would like to just ask you a question before we get started. This verse says that you're not allowed to steal anymore. How many of you came to council service prepared to confess that you've been stealing? You've got a problem stealing. Oh, I got the wrong message for you today. Nobody here. How many of you have ever stole something? All right, there's some hands going up. Okay, now we can get into this thing, right? Well, if you made it right, what does it mean to you? How many of you are tempted to steal if you broaden the definition out to not paying all your taxes, broaden out your definition to not really work like you should when you're on the company's time, not really, you know, if you could slip through something, how many of you really tempted maybe to take anybody here? Well, maybe a few of us would have to put our hands up. It is something to think about. It's human nature. But this morning, I'd like to broaden out beyond just the thought of the stealing thought and choose two words in the middle of the verse. And those two words are no more. And our subject is going to be living above the no more line. No more. Okay? And the first point this morning I'd like to make is that there is a line that goes, and I don't know if to draw this in a circle and put us on the inside, or if I'm going to draw a line like this, but there's a line that says no more that Christians are not to cross. The Christian life is a call to character and to integrity, and there are lines that the Christian is not to cross anymore. Now, I realize this morning that in providing salvation, it's all about God's grace. And there's a lot of people that have come to the place, I mean, one of the great reformers said that every righteous thing that a righteous man does is a mortal sin. Because it's all about God saving us, even though we don't deserve it. And by making every good thing that people do just as bad as the worst thing people do, he erased this lie. And people are going to live like they want as long as they say they believe in Jesus. Just go tell God you're sorry, it's okay. That's what he says. And it ended up being confusion. Won't say his name this morning. But he erased the no more line. I want to tell you something this morning. Man may try to erase God's no more line, but it's there. And you and I know that while we may quibble sometimes about whether something's on this side or not, in the early church it was whether you eat meats or not. Offered to idols. You know, it was offered to idols, so that contaminated it. Yeah, but an idol is not really anything. So it doesn't matter. So they could argue about whether it's a no more line or not. The Bible defines a line for us. And while there are some gray areas that the church speaks about and we work on sometimes, the fact of the matter is, the line is still there. And that today, our society is redefining the line. They're getting some kind of jollies out of saying that a man and a woman, no, it can be two men now. And it doesn't matter, or a man and a wife get married, and it's okay to get split after a while. Split still. What does that matter? Listen, God's word defines the line, and it hasn't changed. I don't need that one anymore anyway. So that red line is up there, and it doesn't change. And he says, no more. I'd like you to, and I probably won't be able to get them all on here. I'd like you to look at this passage now, from starting with verse 25. And let's put the things that are on both sides of this line. I'm going to call this the holy side of the line, or the upside, and living above the line, and that's where we want to be. And down here is the wicked side of the line. So let's start with verse 25, and you tell me some things that are, and which side, what's some things that are on different sides of the line? What's the first one? Anyone? Lying. And what are we supposed to do instead? Speaking truth. Okay? Is that easy? Sometimes. Does it ever get hard? Uh-huh. Sometimes it's really hard. But there's a line. There is a clear line between lying and speaking the truth. And Christians are to live on this side of the line. Let's keep going. What are some more things in this list? Anger. All right. He says, be ye angry. So let's call that righteous. Is there anything that you ever can be righteous indignation or righteous anger over? Huh? Is there anything? You better believe it. I still remember the time when I was working on the job one day. Wasn't thinking about getting mad over nothing. And the school bus stopped over there. And the children got out, and a boy and a girl tumbled out of the van, and the boy was all over that girl, and he was beating her in the face. He was doing everything he could. I still, to this day, don't know how I got over there, but I was pulling him off, saying, you can't do that! You can't do that! You know? And it was just in me. Whenever you see something wrong happen, it makes you cross, doesn't it? It should. It makes God mad. Remember the day when Jesus was in the synagogue, and he wanted to heal a man, and they said, oh, you can't do that on the Sabbath day? He looked on them with, the Bible says, he was angry about. Okay? Righteous anger, on the bad side of that is wrath and all kind of evil things. He says, sin not. So it's possible to be angry about something, but then lay it down, let it go. Don't continue to be angry about it. What are some more things? Okay, we get to one of stealing. Stealing. Uh-oh, I got that on the wrong side of the line, didn't I? Steal, no more, okay. And down here is stealing. Taking things that aren't yours. All right, we're going to keep going. Let's keep going through this passage. What are some more things? Maybe I can get them all on here. Nice big board. It's hard to read it when I'm done writing it, but what else? What are some things that we're not to do anymore? Finding them in the passage. Okay, we're going to talk more about this one. We're going to end up saying how far above the line we can go. That's our last point. We labor, we give, and all of that is a beautiful point that is actually the appeal of this whole message. But I'm not ready to get there yet.
I'm going to go to another verse and another sin and another thing that we're going to say.
Okay, corrupt communication is a foul mouth.
So look that up. Anybody know what a foul mouth is?
You ever hear anybody with a foul mouth? A lot of four-letter bad words.
And you know what? You will stick to them and you'll learn them fell off the way. You learn them, and you start thinking first, and then next you know, you hit your finger and they pop out just like that.
He says, stop it. That's on the other side of the line. No foul mouth for a Christian. None of those cuss words. None of those even euphemisms.
You don't even say, I don't want to say what they are. There's a lot of words. In the English language, if you look it up in the dictionary, it says, that's a nice way to say a euphemism for a bad word. And a Christian ought not do that.
What should we do instead? No corrupt communication, no foul mouth, but rather what? Edify.
Okay, encouragement. I'll write edify since it's short, but we don't use that word very much.
It means say things that build things up, build people up and make them think good things.
Encouragement. Instead of criticizing people all the time and getting in that bad language attitude, which is so easy to do. Maybe we have really, really made it. Yeah, you listen close now.
Sorry about that. But we
live in this world and we start seeing each other and we see how they act. And so we get in this bad attitude mentality.
Let's think about this and think about what we could say to encourage somebody to live right rather than chew them out because they're living wrong.
Oh, that is, there's a lot of people who train themselves never to use those bad words for the last 5 miles. You know what I mean?
All right, no more. Edify good words. All right, let's keep going. Are we done? Bitterness. Okay. I've kind of left my list here behind.
What do we do instead? Kindness. No more. What else goes along with bitterness? That. And clamor. Saying bad things. And bad mouthing people. Running them down. No more bad mouthing. You know how that other church is over there? You know how Uncle So-and-so is? Run them down. You know how the preacher was today? I wish he'd have said something. You know, bad mouthing them. What do you do instead? Be kind one to another.
Tenderhearted. You know what tenderhearted? And so, you see, there's a line, there's a divide. And he tells us what side of the line to be on. Now, he also talks in the next chapter about all kind of immoral sins. He talks about fornication and jesting, joking, evil jokes, bad jokes, and he said, don't live that way, but rather, and this is interesting. What does he say in contrast to living immorally? Giving thanks.
Notice he's up there.
Yes, and the complete opposite in the next chapter as we go through here. Walk in love, but fornication, all uncleanness, covetousness, let it not be thus named among you. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor jesting, which are not fit, but rather giving of thanks, for this you know, that no whoremonger, nor unclean person, nor covetous man. I'd like to talk a little bit more about this line. One of the things we need to remember is that a lot of the stuff on the other side of the line doesn't even tempt us. But almost always there's something over there in forbidden territory that has its appeal to us. I can't understand my dog.
I just found it again the other day when I was telling the dog that. He drug that old rotten deer leg somewhere, how in the world did you find that thing? You dug it up, it was stinking, it's not bitter anymore, it's frozen, it's rotten. My dog didn't try that, get the quack. And you smile over that, right? You look at somebody else's temptation and go, you know,
I've said already about people who like to read about the sports and follow the teams and stuff like that. I wish that was my temptation.
But the problem is, when it's your temptation, it's not easy to give it up.
And so the question that I have is, what am I doing with the one thing that, you know, where I'm tempted? I'd like to take you to a couple of things in relation to this line. Will you turn with me to 2 Peter chapter 2? The Bible tells us that when Christianity really gets established in the world, there are going to be people who will corrupt Christianity. There will be false preachers, and they will teach a religion that waters it down. And he goes on to say that many will follow their pernicious ways, and as they compromise this. And what the verse I'd like to start reading you with is verse 14 about these false teachers. It says, having eyes full of adultery, and then this phrase, and that cannot cease from sin. Right here, is a line invisible to mankind in many ways. But there are people whose religion does not give them the power to stop and not go over this line. And they are in the false prophet group, is what he says. Their eyes are full of adultery, they cannot cease from sin. They beguile unstable souls. So they turn around and preach a compromise religion that allows people to live over there. When the New Testament is all about, let's go back to 1 Corinthians in chapter 10 and verse 13. This is something that we need to remember. 1 Corinthians 10:13. There hath no temptation taken you. There's nothing on the other side of the line, the forbidden line, that gets a hold of you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear. I love that promise. If I step over the line, it's because I have chosen to do so. I have made a choice. God was there saying, you don't have to. Now I've left you leave. 2 Peter 2, one more verse there, talks about couple of verses, talk about Lot, and he lived among them, and he vexed his righteous soul. He delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them, and seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations. Brothers and sisters, this line has been there whenever in the early New Testament days when Christianity was young and the choice was clear, the line was there. 2,000 years later, the waters are all muddy, everything's all gray. People constantly been saying, they're justifying this stuff and they're condemning. He's just living that way because he wants to leave a good impression. And they've got it all. It's still the way it was. The gospel line is still the gospel line. The people who live on this side are still called righteous and holy. And the people who venture or live down here are still the sinners. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the righteous out of temptation, but to reserve the unjust until the day of sinners. Well, that's enough time. We're going to run out of time here anyway. I'd like to just erase this board now. And I'd like to talk about stealing. Already, we have people who've done it already. We found out that a few folks have done that, and I happen to be among that list. And I would like to talk about, let's get into this thing a little bit about what goes along with stealing. And this point I called this, stealing is part of the empty mind syndrome. You know what the word syndrome means? I wasn't sure either. After I used it, I looked it up. After I wrote it down, it means symptoms that all run together. In other words, if you've got a rash and a fever and on and on and on, then you've probably got measles, let's just say, or whatever. It's part of the whole package. There is, when people's stealing is part of the empty mind, get that spelled right, mind syndrome. M-E, S-Y-N-D-R-O-M-E, syndrome, empty mind. I'll put parentheses around. I'd like to show you where I get that. Back in Ephesians chapter 4, where our text is, we're going to back up a few verses because he explains why they end up the way they do, or why you can end up the way you might, if I'm not careful. Verse 17, this I say therefore and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind. The empty mind is what vanity means. Empty mind. And it comes from three things. He goes on to say, in the vanity of their mind. The vanity of their mind an empty mind starts from, and he goes on to say, their understanding is darkened. Understanding they cannot really see the big picture. Why? Because it goes on to say they are alienated from the life of God. They are dead to God. They don't think about God. They don't think about their Creator. They don't think about the one who's made them. They are dead to God. Their understanding is darkened. All they think about is right now. Their understanding is darkened because they're only thinking about what will feel good to me right now because they're not thinking about God. How many thieves start out with prayer? The Lord, help us to do this job. You get away with it, huh? No. When you start thinking about God, you quit the stealing part, okay? Understanding is darkened, they're dead to God, and what's the third thing he says? Because of the blindness. Now that word is also translated hardness. Hardness of heart. What makes somebody's heart hard? When people stomp on it. When you wanted something and you didn't get it. When you thought God was going to give you money. Okay, he was going to give you money, right? He didn't do it. Or you're going to give your husband a blessing. Or you're going to be a nice husband. Or on and on and on and on. We've got a list of expectations out of life. And whenever we go through life and it doesn't happen, then a hard lump gets in there. And then maybe the whole heart is hard after a while. If our heart's hard, we're going to be dead to God. We're going to say, I don't care if you are it, God. I don't care if you're in my life. You're not giving me what I want. So if you don't give me what I want, I'm not going to give you what you want. You ever know anybody that way? I thought that way already. And if you're thinking that way, then it produces a calloused conscience, or being past feeling. All right. A calloused conscience. I want to ask you this morning, what's your conscience like? Soft and tender? Are you looking at God? Are you understanding eternity? Where you are? You're taking those lumps in your heart and you're saying, Lord, take them out. You're the boss. You have the right to do anything you want to with me. Give me any kind of life you want. I have no right to make it any change. Thank you, Lord. Thank you for just giving me breath. Thank you for making me alive. Thank you for
all the things you do, you keep me thanking God and be bitter at these things. A thankful heart is something to deal with this. But because they have an empty mind, and it ends up because of these three things with a callous conscience, it leads down into lasciviousness and greediness. I think there's something else in here. What is it? I forget what it is. Somebody help me? Isn't there another one in there? Uncleanness. Thank you. I've got right in here. Uncleanness. Now, lasciviousness is when you start thinking that something will satisfy you. And you want that thing. And you imagine that thing. And you dream about that. You build skyscrapers about that thing. And you just had that thing to make you happy. And so often that turns to either sexual immorality, sexual deviancy, which is uncleanness, or greediness. Money. Somehow, if you just had one, it happened. Now, is that how a thief or a robber thinks? Huh? No, how does he think? Okay. All right, so, but is how much is God a part of that life? Let's just stop with this now, and let's just think about the thief. Or the, I know there's different reasons why people steal. Sometimes people steal because they're hungry, right? Okay? Because we have a need that produces discontentment. Now, what if a person would go and pray and ask God to answer that need? Sometimes people steal because of they want the thrill. I run across this sometimes. Or the adrenaline rush. You know, I'm doing something and I'm getting away with it. And so it heightens all your senses. But really, when it's down, deep down inside, who's the person thinking about? It goes back to selfishness. Now, if you steal from other people, what do you immediately think about them in relation to you? I'm looking at the whole package now of the thief. The mentality of the thief. No trust. There's no trust in those relationships. Talk about honor among thieves, but you know, even thieves, they know better. They don't steal from each other, but yes, they do when they get a chance. There's no trust in that kind of a relationship. You're watching, you're guarding your back all the time. So what happens to relationships? So relationships, you may as well put an X over. There's no such thing as relationships. So what have you given up? What is part and parcel? What's the rest of the picture for a person who is in a stealing mentality? What's the rest of it? What else goes along with this is that I want my gratification. Gratification center. And entitlement. If I see it, I have a right to it. And if I can get it, then I will get it. And so that's going to get you in trouble. If you're focused on what will make me feel good and how fast can I get it, and if I can see it, I can have it. All of those things produce a mindset of emptiness. Now, how does he feel when he lays his head down? Think about it. There's guilt. There's fear of consequences. See all this person going on in this person's lives? Simple lifestyle, isn't it? It just gets more and more complicated. Guilt-ridden. His boundaries are changing. Oh, I'd never steal from that person, or I'd never do it in that way.
You know, every sinner
still has things that he wouldn't do. If you change the circumstances, he'll be doing things too. Well, you know, I might divorce my wife and marry another, but I would never touch a child after a while when boundaries are changed.
But there's no relationships. Recently, somebody was just telling me about an acquaintance of his who went to jail for molesting a child. And he says he is constantly living in fear in that self because the other men want to kill him for doing what he did. The only reason he can stay alive is because one man, who's a huge man, has said, I will protect you if you feel that. And so, look at the light, look at the mentality, look at the whole life of the thief.
Now, we could just take the word thief out and put in the word gossip. And we could take the word thief out and put in any one of these, gossip, any other word.
And while some things might change, most of them stay the same. See that? Because there's a whole lifestyle, there's a syndrome that goes along with living below the line. And you might have Mennonite clothes on, you might have a good impression, but this is your lifestyle. This is the stuff that you think life is made of. And God does not intend us to have this as the thing that life is made of. Let's explore the other side of the line. Brother Eric was starting to go there a while ago. And I had to hold him back. Now let's go for it. What is living above the low line? For the third point now, the syndrome of a holy life. Let's look at the verse. What's the first thing he does if he's going to stop stealing? Labor. All right, let's start with labor. What do you do when you labor? You work. You put forth effort. Is it easy to work? How many of you were born liking to work? How many of you had children born that liked to work?
Well, maybe a little bit. Some things, but usually not.
Labor. Along with labor goes a certain change of attitude.
Along with labor goes a humility. Along with labor goes a acceptance of a hard work. That's what this one is. And this is what's so hard for so many people. Because to give up leading the life, to lower the entire beginning, labor is difficult.
Secondly, what? Working with hands. You learn a skill. Your hands have to be taught to do things.
Anything from hitting a nail. I remember that when I go along with my father to the job.
The process is the same. We put forth effort, but it takes time and application. It takes a change of mind, but it's a hard job to learn a skill. Whether it's a teaching in the classroom, we have some of those here, whether it's selling stuff in a store, whatever it is, it takes a job, but this is part of the call to a better life, is to labor, working with our hands. And now, number three, the thing which is good. In other words, who are you thinking about? The thing which is good. You're supplying a need to humanity. One time I read an article on economics. And the article in economics says that basically every society is built around one of two ways of thinking. On the one side is the predator. In other words, if somebody else has it, I can get wealth by taking it away. On the other side is the production. Even in farming, you know, primitive societies, some cities or villages lived by going out there and tilling the ground, planting their crops, the corn, the wheat, whatever it was, and by laboring, they produced, they had production, and they acquired wealth through getting it from nature. There's other people who get wealth by getting it from somebody else. Once you learn to get your wealth from somebody else, even if it's Uncle Sam, even if it's wherever it is, once you learn to get your wealth by being a leech, by being a predator, once you learn to do that, it's extreme. It takes a whole change of mind to humble yourself, put forth energy, learn a skill, do something for the benefit of society. But guess what? Feel totally different. Because you are making a contribution. You know, even if it's a little contribution, which is good that you may have. Is it wrong to have? If you don't stop there, if you don't stop there, to have is a good thing. To have is an okay thing. It's right to have, that you may have, number five, to give to the needy. You know what? There's a huge difference between a person who stole and somebody who is now doing these five steps. Doing something good, having some ownership. This is the call to the Christian. That this is one tiny area of life that we're not even tempted to discuss. Let's talk about all these other things that we're down to. Whether it's all the way over here, or sexual immorality, all the way back here to some of the other things, like the kind of words we use. We could do the same thing. We could talk the same thing about being foul-mouthed. Well, what do you do instead? He says, say words that forget the truth. How does he say that? Instead of lie, speak the truth, for we are members. I love that whole thing about when you start speaking the truth, you don't have that thrill or the rush, you don't have the guilt, but your trust begins to grow. You begin to have gratification, relationships, and instead of gratification, you start to have satisfaction. And we could build a whole, just like we did down here, we could build a whole syndrome mentality of people who are willing to live on this side of the line. What I'm saying is that to be a Christian or to be an unbeliever are two totally different things. Now the devil would like to say that you can go over here a little. Go over here a little and it won't matter, as long as you don't get caught. But this morning I hope we see how vividly different the pictures are. And how much we need to choose to live and walk with Christ in the totally new lifestyle that he calls for us. I know it's not 70 A.D., and I know that it's not 1400, it's 2014. Our life, everybody's life, may be a little different here, but these principles are timeless. They apply to everyone. Let him that stole, steal no more. Rather let him labor, working with his hands, the thing which is good, that he may have to give to his needs. Thank you for your attention this morning. I don't know where the time went. I apologize for running over.